Well, this is a story. If you love stories, you should find yourself loving the book of Ruth. It's a story that has a number of elements. First of all, it's a story of contrast. If you were here last week, and as we made our way through the book of Judges, and we saw that the book of Judges ends with one line, there was no king in Israel, and everyone did what was right in their own eyes. And it would leave you wondering and saying, was there anybody that was following God during this time in the life of the judges? And so when you look at the book of Ruth, and when it opens up, it says, in the days when the judges ruled. So the context of this book is going to be a picture of another family, the family of Elimelech, and what God was going to be doing through them and in them. And so we see this as kind of a contrast of what was taking place in Judges, and it's as if God wants to pull back the curtain and say, everyone wasn't doing what was right in their own eyes. Second of all, it's a book about love and kindness. I think it's Paul Miller, who the author of a book that I read, and it's centered around the book of Ruth, and he entitled it, I forgot the title now, A Life of Loving, or something to that effect. And his point in his book is that this is a book that shows us, and we'll point this out later, what a loving life looks like. If you want to know how to love people, study the book of Ruth. And we will try to point out some of those points. We're going to see the love that Naomi has for her daughters-in-law. We'll see the love that Ruth has for Naomi, and we're going to see the love that Boaz has for these two widows and what he does to make sure that they experience God's blessing. I think third, it's a story of hope. It's a story of hope. We see, as we'll see, as this story opens up, it's tragic. There's a famine. There's someone who's lost their husband as well as their sons. And so there's a bitterness about chapter one, but when you get to the end of the book, you have Naomi who in the first chapter says, if you want to call me anything, call me Mara, which means bitterness. But in the end, we see her sitting there with a newborn baby in her lap. We all know what kind of joy and hope comes when we welcome a new son or a daughter or a grandchild into our lives. And so it's a book of hope. At the end, it's also the picture that, yes, Judges ends, there was no king. At the end of Ruth, there's a king in sight, though maybe the actors or the play people, the people in this drama didn't fully understand everything that God was going to do, but we have the story, and so we see that there's hope, that there's going to be a king called David, but ultimately there's going to be a king named Jesus who would be born. It's a story full of suspense. If you like suspense, you would find it in this story. Here's these widows. They've lost their husbands, and Ruth stays with Naomi. They come back to Bethlehem. And if you know anything about that culture of that day, there was the worst position you could be in as a woman would be to be a widower, because there's no one there to find you, support you. And so you get to the end of chapter one when they return to Bethlehem and they meet the women of that day or some of the people of Bethlehem. And the question is, what's going to happen to them? And then you see it kind of unfold, and Ruth gets out into Boaz's field, and she's being able to be cared for through Boaz. And then we're going to see that Boaz is this kinsman redeemer, and we'll talk about that. And yet he finds out that he's not the first in line. And so as you read this story, you're kind of rooting for Boaz and Ruth to kind of get it together. Like we do often with young couples, you say, hey, they'd be a good match. And so then in the middle of chapter 3 and 4, chapter 4, when Boaz meets this other redeemer at the gate, And he says, well, you know, I'm second in line, you're first in line. Will you be the redeemer for these ladies? And we all hold our breath. And what does he say? I'll do it. And you go, oh no. Boaz gets kicked out of the story. But then as we know, when he realized what it would cost him, he said, no, I'm not going to do it. And Boaz steps in. And so we see this story of suspense. It's a story of God's gracious work. You know, one of the things that we've been talking about is this upper story, is to realize that the book of Ruth and in this Old Testament story, we're seeing that God is working out a plan and purpose. We're going to see in chapter 1 that they really weren't sure where God was. Maybe like many of us in the midst of a crisis. And yet God is going to show in each one of these chapters, even though he's not necessarily front and center, you realize that at the end of the story that God was working out his plan and purpose through Ruth and through Boaz, which would often bring that offspring of the seed of David. But lastly, and probably all by way of introduction, I believe this book is a journey from emptiness to fullness. You can't miss it. In the front part of this story, you find some people who are struggling. They're experiencing somewhat of an emptiness in their life. And yet throughout the book, we begin to see something of the fullness, something of the blessing of God that continues to come to them. When Ruth goes out into the field of Boaz and begins to glean the leftovers of the harvest, and Boaz continues to make sure that she not only gets the scraps, but he says to his workers, pull out some of the other ones, leave them behind for her. And she comes back to Naomi with this bundle of gleaning. And it's interesting in chapter 2, verse 19, Naomi says, where have you been gleaning today? Where on earth have you been? Thinking about how did you end up with such a great harvest? You were just picking up the scraps. And obviously she talked about what Boaz did. At the end of this book, you see the blessing of God, the fullness of blessing that comes. And I would like to suggest to you maybe that that's the picture of conversion. For all of us in this room who've placed our faith and trust in Christ, we've come, whether we want to admit it or not, in some ways we've all come from a place of emptiness. We've tried to live our lives on our own. We've tried to live without God. We've tried to maybe be good, not necessarily evil, but for us trying to somehow attain to what God would want us to be. And it was when we put our faith and trust in Christ that there came to our lives. And I would hope that we would have testimonies this morning of the fullness of what God has done for us. John 10:10, we love to quote that verse. Jesus came to what? Bring life. And to what? Bring it abundantly. Fullness of blessing that he brings. Well, that's the story, and that's the theme this morning. So first of all, I didn't realize I had that slide there. But here is the journey begins in tragedy. Chapter 1. It's a tragic loss. Elimelech is from the town of Bethlehem. There is a famine in the land. And so what do? They go to the land of Moab. If we had a map here, if you know anything about Israel, there's kind of divides down the eastern edge of Israel is the Jordan River, the Dead Sea. And if you go to the east of that, you would find Moab and many of these other places. But Moab is on the eastern side of the Jordan River. And so they leave the land of promise, the land flowing with milk and honey, and they go. Bethlehem is entitled or called the house of bread, and there was no bread in Bethlehem, and so they go to Moab, probably the worst place they could end up going. Moab, the Moabites were their enemies. The Moabites were known for their evil and for their sinfulness. We don't know that Elimelech did this in disobedience to God. It really doesn't tell us in the text that he did, But he says that they went there and they settled in. It wasn't just a sort of a trip for a week or so. They settled into that place. And he had two sons, and the two sons married two Moabite women, Ruth and Orpah. And so we see here, after some time, Elimelech, Naomi's husband, dies. And she's left with her two sons. So she's still in good shape, at least, because she has offspring who could care for her. But over time, the two sons die as well. And all she's left with is her two daughters-in-law. And it's interesting, in chapter 1, verse 5, it says, "And Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband." The Hebrew says the woman was alone. You can imagine. Now, these were Israelites. These were Jews. They understood something about Yahweh, because as you read through chapter 1, you realize that Naomi is taking all of what's happening to her as something that the Lord has brought about, and the Lord's hand has gone out against me. Verse 13, she's explaining to her daughters-in-law and trying to convince them, and she says, "The Lord's hand has gone out against me." It's a tragedy here. It's a difficulty. And in some ways, we look at that, and that kind of sets the stage for a couple of things. One, it's often in the midst of tragedy and suffering and difficulty that love can flourish, that love becomes important. It doesn't produce it, but it provides the opportunity for us to love one another. When you think about this COVID virus that we all hate and we wish it would go away, and in one sense, there's a tragic part to that, and there's a suffering that goes along with it. And yet, it is an opportunity for us to love others and serve them. Here was Naomi, who finds herself in the midst of this tragic situation, and we're going to see that love flourishes out of this tragedy. But before that, she has her two daughter-in-laws, and as she hears, it's interesting, if you want to look for where God is at work, in verse 6 we see, "When she heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of the people by providing food to them, Naomi and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there." She heard that God had brought about a renewal. The famine was over, and there was a blessing that was waiting for them, and it required her to return. Again, not to try to spiritualize too much, but if you look at this chapter, there's a lot of returning. She tells her daughter-in-laws, "Don't come with me. You return to your own people. I'm going to return to my place. I'm going to go there, and I'm going to find." And in one sense, she's going to go back. You see, Moab might have been a place where they went for a season, but that wasn't the place of blessing. The place of blessing was in the land of promise, the promised land. And so this famine comes, there's death, and then ultimately we see that Naomi is at the end, when she gets back to Bethlehem and the ladies see her. It's interesting, when they look at her, they say, "Can this be Naomi?" Verse 19 of chapter 1. It's almost as if maybe the years of difficulty and grief in Moab had sort of aged her. We don't know, but there's a sense in which they say, "Is that really Naomi?" And Naomi speaks up and says, "No, call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me." Is that true? Well, obviously, if you believe in the sovereignty of God, God knew what was going on in her life. But was God somehow absent? Was God gone? Was somehow God not able to do something? Was he not able to take all of these things and work them together for good to those who loved God? There's no question in my mind that Naomi knew God and loved God. She was trying to figure out what God was up to. And many times in our lives, when there's things that press in on us, the difficulties of life, we may be tempted to think that somehow God is absent or gone. And yet I believe that we're going to see in the unfolding of this story that God is very much at work. One last thing that we need to see is that we see that God has provided for Naomi in this first chapter in a way that maybe she didn't even realize. In fact, in some ways she should have, but she doesn't. One is she hears about the fact that the famine is over, so that's the hand of God. She attributes it that. She heard that the Lord had come and taken care of that, providing food. But not only that, God provides a companion for Naomi, Ruth. The dialogue that goes on in chapter 1 between Naomi and her daughters-in-law. She kind of argues through a whole situation. She's concerned. She wants to let them know that if they come with her, there's really no hope. Remember, these are Moabites. They understood where their land was. They understood the culture and everything. And to go with her back to Israel would be to step into a whole new environment. And so she tries to convince them. One, go back, verse 8. Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show kindness to you as you have shown to your dead and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband. So she's concerned and she's praying God's blessing to rest on these daughters-in-law. Now, lest you be too hard, Orpah does the most practical thing. She decides she's going to go back. She was unwilling to maybe make the sacrifice that it would require for her to go with Naomi. We don't know. But she goes back. She's not condemned here. She turns and goes back. And yet, when it comes to Ruth, Ruth replies, "Don't urge me to leave you," verse 16, "or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if anything but death separates you and me." When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. That is so powerful, to think about this Moabite woman who obviously makes a decision, and it's a decision to stay with Naomi, but it's not just a decision sort of out of her own mind. She's also, I think, expressing her faith in Jehovah, her faith in Yahweh, that not only your people will be my people, but your God will be my God. And so we see Ruth, a Moabite, embracing this following after God, Yahweh. And so we see that, again, that upper story that God is working out is going to not just be for the people of Israel, but is going to include people from every nation, every tribe, every tongue, every people group. So we see that this story is a journey from emptiness to fullness. It's a story that begins in tragedy. But it's also a journey, as we said earlier, that reveals a loving life. Now, when we look at this story, we realize that many times we hear the book of Ruth, and maybe you've heard the book of Ruth preached this way, is that this is a love story between Ruth and Boaz. How many of you heard that? You know, it's about Boaz's love for Ruth, because obviously Boaz gets Ruth in the end as his wife, and has a child with her, and he rescues her in one sense. But when you look at this story, it's really a story about love evidenced in a number of ways, and probably the primary love relationship. Well, let's walk through. First of all, there's a love of Naomi for Ruth as well as for Orpah. Where do we see that? Well, we see it in chapter 1. We see that she could very well have easily said selfishly, "Yes, you ladies need to come along with me. You need to follow me back to Bethlehem, back to this house of bread. You need to be there for me in terms of support." But here she was willing to sort of say, "No, go back. There's no hope. There's no future here." Think about the faith it took for Ruth to leave Moab, a place that she was familiar with, and go with Naomi, not sure of what would happen. These were widow ladies, remember, heading back to a place that she knew nothing about, had never seen, and yet she was trusting that the Lord would take care of her. It's interesting that Naomi doesn't really mention Ruth at the gate when she gets there. Kind of a little interesting detail. You would have thought that Naomi would have introduced Ruth to the folks there, but it was really more about her, and yet Ruth was willing to stay faithful to her. I think the second loving life that you see here is that Ruth loved Naomi. In the start of chapter 2, when Naomi finds herself there, Ruth the Moabite, verse 2, said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor." In other words, she must have known enough about the Old Testament law that that was allowable, that often in the harvesting time they would leave whatever scraps were left. They would come through and obviously harvest by hand. There were always some twigs left. And so those who were the poor of that day, one of the ways that they cared for them was to leave a certain amount of that so they could come back in afterwards on their own and harvest the grain. And here was Ruth. Naomi doesn't offer to go with her. She goes on her own. And we see throughout this story, this love that Ruth has for Naomi. I would make the case that this is more about a love story between a daughter-in-law and her mother-in-law than about Ruth and Boaz. But obviously, there is the love of Boaz that he has for both Ruth and Naomi. His protection, his provision, his purity in chapter 3, this weird situation where Naomi dresses up Ruth and kind of gives her the right kind of perfume and the right kind of dress and says, "Go meet Boaz out in the field and sort of lay down by his side and have him uncover the corner, spread that corner of the garment over him." And so that's kind of a situation where we're not going to try to unpackage this morning. It's kind of a strange ordeal. And yet, obviously, it wasn't to seduce him by any means. And yet, Boaz also shows great purity and great care for her, even in the midst of that, when he realizes that he is that kinsman redeemer, his lawfulness and righteousness. What do we learn about love, a life of love? Well, a couple of things. One, we have to be willing to sacrifice. Ruth was willing to sacrifice for Naomi to go with her, to go back to her place where she lived. Boaz, when it comes down to being a kinsman redeemer, we'll see it costs something to do that. It wasn't cheap. It was often you were doing something on behalf of the family that would often mean that you would not reap the benefits of that. It would be the offspring of that family that would come. They would get the inheritance that you were trying to rescue and save for that family. There was simply a helpfulness that happens throughout this book that we see Boaz caring for Ruth throughout this time when he sits her down, tells her to stay in his field. We realize that the time of the judges were difficult times, and so he says, "Don't go in anybody's field, just anybody's field, because you might be at risk. But if you stay in my fields, I'll instruct my young men not to bother you." And so we see something of his great love and protection for both Ruth and Naomi. It's a journey that reveals a loving life. But probably the main theme here that we see in this story is that there is a sense in which this is a journey that provides a redeemer, a kinsman redeemer. There's a number of things going on here. There's levirate marriage that would often happen if someone was widowed, if a particular bride would lose her husband, the brother or the closest relative would be willing to marry her and hopefully produce an offspring for her that would carry on the family name, that would be the inheritor of all of their land and inheritance, and would be able to carry on the name of that family. That was important in those days. The kinsman redeemer was the one who was closest to that qualification. And so in chapter 2, verse 1, again, back what we're seeing is God at work here. Notice it says right in chapter 2, verse 1, "Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing whose name was Boaz." It's interesting. In the chapter 2, verse 1, it almost says God is at work here. There, and guess where Ruth ends up? Ruth tells her, I'm going to go into a field. Naomi says, go ahead, my daughter. So she went out and began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters. As it turned out, interesting, one of those little interesting details, she found herself working in the field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. You think that was just by chance? Obviously, God is working out his plan and purpose here in this whole idea of this kinsman redeemer. We realize that Boaz was this close person. And so we see this development of the relationship between Boaz and Ruth. He understands something of her noble character, her willingness. He realizes her allegiance to God. In chapter 2, we see him saying, I've heard about you. I've heard that you've left your father and mother, your homeland, and came to live with a people you did not know. And then he says in verse 12, may the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. What a great picture of salvation. In one sense, you and I have taken refuge under the wings of the Almighty, under his provision, under what he's done. And so we see Boaz recognizing something of her noble character. In chapter 3, we realize that he realizes that she's asking him, would you be that kinsman redeemer? Would you step into that role? And we've already said he knew that he wasn't the first in line. He was the second in line. Interesting, again, as you read the story in chapter 4, verse 1, Boaz, again, decides that he's going to take this up. He's going to follow through. Naomi knows him and says, don't worry, Ruth. As Ruth comes back and tells her after their plan what had taken place, she says, this man will not rest until the matter is settled. Boaz was a person of action. Chapter 4, verse 1. Meanwhile, Boaz went up to the town gate and sat there. When the kinsman redeemer he had mentioned came along. Don't miss those little things. He happens to go to the gate where everything, all the business takes place. And guess what? This other kinsman redeemer just happens to come by. And they go into this dialogue. And he tells him that he's willing to do it, but he realizes he can't do it because this other one has the priority. And so we realize that he says at that point, we said earlier, he says, I will redeem these folks. No doubt saw that, hey, if I take Naomi and Ruth, these are widow ladies. Naomi probably is older, too old. She probably won't have a baby any longer. Ruth had been barren for at least 10 years because she was married to her husband back in Moab for 10 years and they didn't have a baby. So maybe she had some birth issues as far as that goes. And so maybe this first kinsman redeemer saw this as an opportunity that says, hey, I'll be able to inherit all of their land. But then Boaz says this, if you buy the land from Naomi, you're going to also need to take Ruth the Moabite. You'll have to acquire the dead man's widow in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property. In other words, you're going to have to produce an offspring. And so it's not just getting the land, but you're going to have to be willing to take Ruth on as your wife. And maybe he was married and he couldn't do that again. Well, we know that it was a costly undertaking, but here was Boaz, a willing servant. He was willing to take on this role of being a kinsman redeemer. It's a journey that provides a redeemer. You know, when we think about salvation, we need a redeemer. And we need someone who will rescue us, someone who will make it possible for us to receive an inheritance. When he became their kinsman redeemer, Ruth became his wife. He married her. She became his bride. You and I become the bride of Christ when he comes to stand in our stead and be our redeemer as well. What's the last? It's a journey that results in blessing. Real quick, as we look at this idea of blessing, we're going to see chapter 4, it's full. It's well worth preaching. We hear that Boaz is going to marry Ruth. And so the elders and those are gathering at the gates and they're saying, may the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah. May you have standing in Ephrathah, That's Bethlehem. And be famous in Bethlehem through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman. May your family be like that of Perez, who Tamar bore to Judah. We see that they're recognizing that something great is going to happen here, and they're praying that God will see that happen. It goes on to say that Ruth marries Boaz. And so in one sense, Ruth was redeemed. She was brought into a relationship with Boaz. But she's not the only one who's redeemed. Naomi was redeemed. But how was Naomi redeemed? It wasn't Boaz. It's interesting, as you read down, it says here, "The woman said to Naomi, 'Praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a kinsman redeemer.'" And you would have stopped and said, again, the suspense, is that Boaz? No. "May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons, has given him birth." Who's Naomi's kinsman redeemer? It's Obed. It's the baby. That baby was going to bring about a redeeming work in her life. Her inheritance would be secured. She would be able to have someone to carry on her line down the road. And so we see that. Finally, we see that God's people are redeemed. When we look at what happens to this baby, Obed becomes the father of Jesse and ultimately the father of David, the king. There was no king in Israel. Now there's the hope that there will be a king. And I think there's also that you and I have a redeemer, a savior.